I'm excited to talk to you guys today. Instagram is my personal favorite place to play at work, so I'm excited to chat about some of the things that happened on the platform last year. I'm sure most of you are pretty familiar with it, but it's fun to recap anyways, and how this is going to impact content for brands in 2019. So, has anyone here been to the Museum of Ice Cream? There was one in San Francisco, there was one in LA for a little, okay, cool. If you were there, how many of you took a selfie or a photo of yourself when you were there? Right, it's like basically the reason you go. So this photo is from the Museum of Ice Cream in San Francisco. It's from an excellent New York Times article that if you haven't read, I highly recommend you look up. It's called The Existential Void of the Pop-Up Experience. And this poor, poor New York Times reporter was basically assigned to go to all Museum of Ice Cream-like experiences during the course of one summer. So there's like a rosé one in Brooklyn. These things are ridiculous. They're all over the place. And so she wrote about it and kind of how it turned into a soul-sucking experience after a while. I think I like this picture, and I wanted to start off with it because this photo is kind of ridiculous, right? And it's kind of sad. And I think for me, it represents the shift that we're seeing on Instagram. You know, these experiences used to be the gold standard, the things that we were designed for social posts. And I think that people are starting to recognize how inauthentic they are and how they're kind of seen as fake and empty now. So obviously, these are pictures that were taken from the Museum of Ice Cream. Some are users, some are the Kardashians and Katy Perry, no big deal. They're fun, they're beautiful photos, but they're all posed. And the experience was all about taking the photo and making it for Instagram. And I think what we see consumers asking a lot more is that an experience worth having? And we see a lot of brands doing this too. If you've ran an Instagram for a brand like me, you've probably been guilty of this at some point in your career. I know I have. Posting something just for the sake of it being Instagram friendly. So whether that's doing it the angle that's over the top or adding a certain filter or color treatment or just the actual content, not really caring about whether it says something, but just about whether or not it's Instagram friendly. And I think what's interesting is that this starts to feel ridiculous after a while because it is ridiculous. And what I want to talk to you about today is how consumers are starting to reject this overly curated world on Instagram and how brands can actually leverage this attitudinal change in order to really stay authentic and true to who they are. So Janet did a little intro already, but just a little bit about me. Like she said, I had big dreams of being a journalist after I graduated from college, and then every magazine I wanted to work for was firing people when I graduated. And so I thought, holy shit, what am I gonna do? And I got really lucky and started working at Houzz and just fell in love with home content. And I've just been lucky and having a really fun career, worked at a bunch of places, doing everything from writing about little homes to interviewing some of my favorite chefs to meeting Shaquille O'Neal. So it's been really great, and I'm lucky to find myself at Trulia, which I don't know if you're familiar, is owned by Zillow Group, real estate site, and have been there for about a year now, and it's been really fun, kind of a nice combination of the tech and home worlds that I really enjoy. So let's look back at 2018, since that's really what set the stage of what we're gonna see in this year. Okay, so start off and take a look at this photo. Gorgeous photo. This is from a model slash influencer. Her name is Johanna Emma Olsen. She has 525,000 followers. And it's a beautiful photo. I don't know if anyone notices anything unusual about it besides the fact that she turned off the comments. Basically what happened is this girl is known for posting a variety of very similar content. And last year, it was revealed that she wasn't actually visiting these places. She was just photoshopping herself onto backgrounds that looked like she was in France and all these amazing places in Europe. She's not there. That's why she turned off the comments, because people were just annihilating her. So one of many little influencer scandals that happened last year, and I think this stat is really telling. Edelman does this trust barometer report that's also really fascinating, worth digging into. 60% of people no longer trust social media platforms. And of course, all the stuff that's happened with Facebook and privacy, like all of that adds into it. I think in general, consumers are just realizing you can't trust what you see on here anymore. And I think they know that influencers' influence can no longer be trusted. I read an article that a lot of influencers are pretending to have sponsored posts, so they're not even being paid by brands, but they want to look like they're big enough to be paid by brands, so they have these fake sponsored posts, which is just like so messed up and weird. Or they're writing about brands that they don't even really like, they're just accepting the money. And I think everyone, including brands, are so anxious to make a buck on this channel, it's starting to become really transparent to consumers. And so the stuff that is fake is quickly called out and just doesn't feel good. And what you see is that consumers are starting to look back to friends, family, other close acquaintances. Like, that's how they're getting their information. That's how they are learning about new things. Mental health was a big topic on social media last year. And I think there's been a lot more awareness around the impact that this kind of fake world has had on our mental health. Last year, 34% of Gen Z said they were quitting social media permanently because it, quote, tears apart their self-esteem. So this was very public this year, I think partly due to some more high-profile celebrities discussing this. Pete Davidson comes to mind. This post is from Hailey Baldwin, now Bieber, and who took like a huge break off of Instagram and was very public about why she did it and how much better she felt after she took time off of Instagram. And I think for me, this is really about brands and influencers, who are often paid by brands, creating a world that isn't real and highlighting only, I think everyone here has experienced this, right? Like, you see people just highlighting only the happiest pieces of their lives, and so it seems like being beautiful, skinny, rich, and fun is easy and constant, and why don't I have that? So it's no surprise that people are suffering. And then I think the last thing, big change last year was Instagram stories and just the true embrace of spontaneity on the channel. I think prior to Instagram stories, the feed was becoming super, super curated. It was really, you know, it's so funny, you think about what Instagram was like when it launched 10 years ago, which is crazy, but it was a photo sharing platform. And so everything on there was very curated, very beautiful. And now what you see with Instagram stories is it lowers the stakes for quality, right? Like, you're supposed to post really quickly. The stuff's only up for 24 hours for the most part, unless you add it to a highlight, and how many people are really looking at that? So it encourages this platform that's informal and spontaneous. And so, you know, I think about the content that I see on Instagram stories that I find the most engaging. I don't know about any of you, but I'm actually following less and less brands and bloggers and influencers because the less polished posts feel more real, surprising, and fun to me. The stuff that's not so predictable, the stuff that is unexpected when I open it, that's what's fun for me. The stuff that's become more serialized and editorial, I actually don't enjoy as much anymore. And so I think you'll see, I know I've seen this in my work too, is that users are starting to skip over the stuff that feels like it's the same thing over and over again. Common thread through all this is authenticity. I think consumers are really just maturing in the way they're using Instagram. It's, you know, again, it's been almost 10 years. And I think they're starting to crave content that is approachable and it celebrates imperfection and humanity. And I think that's an awesome thing. I think it's great. And so instead of kind of having this really high quality, beautiful photography, I think it's a little bit more about storytelling and the emotion behind the content than it is about having just a super gorgeous photo. And I think the most successful brands and influencers are those that really lean into this. So up here you'll see, you guys are probably familiar with most of these, but up top two of my favorite people to follow on Instagram, Busy Phillips on the left and Chrissy Teigen on the right, two celebrities who have just seen massive growth in their Instagram following, and I think in huge part because they're super honest on there. They talk about mental health, postpartum, body issues. They're just very, very open, and it's really refreshing. It's not just these like perfect photos all the time. And then the bottom two are beauty brands. The left is Glossier and the right is Hims, a men's beauty brand, I guess. And we'll talk about Glossier in a second, but I love both of these because they use a lot of user photos and they're not these kind of like perfect Photoshopped models. Again, they're just real people using their products and it just feels a lot more approachable. So, consumer distrust, mental health, spontaneity, all of this is really pushing for more authenticity on Instagram. And I think the question is, of course, you know, how does this impact you and the work you do for your brand? So we'll take a look at a few brands who are starting to lean into this and some takeaways as far as what they're doing right. Glossier, which I talked about. I don't know, for those of you who aren't familiar with Glossier, even if you aren't into makeup, it's a great follow on Instagram. But this is a millennial targeted makeup brand that's really been rooted in social media from the beginning. Everything from the packaging to the founder to the people that the influencers that they're working with, it's all designed to be a huge departure from more traditional beauty brands. I think a huge thing that they do that I love, and the screenshots here illustrate that, is that they use a lot of user-generated content, UGC. And what's great about this, I mean, first of all, they're not doing anything crazy here. They're literally just screenshotting people's tweets, which is, I think, it's not the kind of thing that you would think is traditionally Instagram beautiful, but the engagement on these things is crazy. And what I love about this is, you know, they're beautiful people, right? Like, they're not, like, these are both beautiful women, but they're not Photoshopped, airbrushed supermodels, and it's smart because, one, it really allows the customer to do the talking. You know, these people are, they're basically serving as reviews for their product. Two, it encourages more content because people see that they're posting real users and then they get excited and they want to post stuff too. But also it just really stands out. You know, if you're following Glossier and say five other beauty brands, something like this is going to really stand out amidst, you know, some of the very like close-up, high-quality photos in a good way. And I think what I also like about this is it really sets the tone for kind of what Glossier is about, which is empowerment. And it's such a different message from a lot of, again, more traditional brands. Instead of using makeup to cover up insecurities, it's really about highlighting your beauty. And they really focus on that in their messaging and their content. So this is like a little campaign that they did recently that's super fun and worth looking up. It's on their channel right now. And they have this product, Boybrow. It's an eyebrow tool. And what they did is they sent the product to select group of micro-influencers, so 20,000 followers or less. All these micro-influencers were also moms, so a little bit older than their target demo, which I thought was super smart. Trying to see if they could get into that. They have a really tight hold on Gen Z and millennials. And so what they did is they asked, all of these women had sons, and they asked these women, have your son put on your brows using Boybrow. So Boybrow, fun play on words. But first of all, these videos are so cute. They're really, really fun to see. And it does a couple things. You know, again, it reaches a new audience, but it also really just communicated how easy it is to use the product. If a seven-year-old can do it, anybody can do it. And it just felt really genuine, really real. It wasn't this like perfect video of a model running down the beach with like the most amazing makeup you've ever seen. It was a mom at home having her son try to put on her eyebrows. It was great. And I think what you can see is that it's working. Glossier is not that old of a brand. They have 1.8 million followers. And if you look at the hashtag, this was last week, so I'm sure it's more now, but over 370,000 posts. So what they're doing feels relatable. It feels real, and people are enjoying it. So Trulia, of course, I had to give a shout out to what I'm working on. And I think what's interesting about Trulia is our mission is to help people discover a place they want to live, and we do this by helping you find the right neighborhood. Through research, we found that when you are looking for a house, the neighborhood is just as, if not more important than the home, which makes sense. I don't know if anyone anywhere pretty much realizes. It seems very logical, but it's not something that a lot of real estate companies are leaning into. So we really like go from the neighborhood perspective, and we wanted to make sure that our content on our social channels was really reflecting this. And while we were doing consumer research, we learned something important that's really helped drive our strategy and that I put up here. When it comes to home, what's real is what's beloved. And beauty is really in the eye of the beholder. And when I think about my own home and my own neighborhood, I live in the Mission in San Francisco. It's not a perfect neighborhood. My apartment is not perfect. But I love it, and it means something to me. And I think what we realized is that people don't expect it to be perfect, and I think they actually like when it's not. So the photos that you see here are all user-generated content, and that's pretty much half of all the content that we post on Instagram right now. And so what we do is we just look around in different neighborhoods on Instagram, look for photos that kind of represent what we're hoping is a real neighborhood point of view, and whether it's houses or shops or whatever, parks, and then we ask the user if we can use their photo. You know, this is great for us, and again, it's a really efficient stream of content, but we also get to have conversations with consumers, which is really nice. People are usually really excited, which is always fun. And, you know, really we feel like nothing represents a neighborhood in a more genuine way than a photo from someone who actually lives there. And it's been great for us. Again, it's really efficient stream of content, but last year it only accounted for 15% of our content on the channel, but over 25% of our engagement. So it was funny to see that actually the more approachable content was doing so much better than some of our like stuff that we went out and shot specially for the channel. So the photos here are actually all taken by photographers for one of our products. So again, to kind of help people find the right neighborhood, we have all these landing pages where if you want to move to Boston, Massachusetts, you can go and look at every single neighborhood, and there will be dozens of photos to really help you understand what it looks like from a local's perspective. So we're really lucky that we have access to this content. And I think what's interesting about this work is, again, you know, these are all beautiful photos, right? Like, we're not exactly posting empty parking lots on our channel. But we want our channel to look great, but we also want to make sure we're providing a sense of what a neighborhood is really like. And so there's things that we really think about. It's approachability, you know, and we're trying not to post, like, all mansions on here that people can't afford. Local perspective, like, we really coach the photographers to go from a certain angle so it looks like it's someone on the ground taking a picture. And that they're thinking about things that locals would want to see and enjoy. And then humanity, it's obviously hard to get people to sign release forms, so we don't always get people in photos, but occasionally we get a good animal and some people, so that helps, because obviously that's a big part of the neighborhood. And I think kind of similar to Glossier trying to debunk traditional beauty myths, that's part of what we're trying to do with our Instagram too, is you think the real estate category invented staging for the most part, this idea of this really perfect over-the-top home. And I think what we're realizing is the perfect home doesn't really exist, and consumers know that. They know that there's a series of trade-offs, and so we feel like we should be honest about what those are and try to give them as accurate of a perspective as possible. And so we relaunched our channel with a strategy in August, and engagements have gone up almost 200% and impressions 150%. Okay, third case study is a brand that I am obsessed with, Bumble. Basically, everyone I know who works with me tells me to shut up about Bumble because I talk about it all the time. And what's funny is I'm married, but I follow them and I am obsessed with their content. I'm not using the app, but I cannot get enough of it. I think it is so funny. It is sharp. It's really empowering. I save so many of their posts and send it to friends because I think it is so great and it's so damn relatable. Like Glossier and Trulia, Bumble is, I know, right? Like, they're so freaking funny. The middle one just kills me. So they're working on overturning a years-old idea. Original, like, old-school online dating marketing felt very unattainable. It was all about find your Prince Charming and you will find happiness. And I think there were a lot of traditional, like, he met she this way. What I love about Bumble is they kind of acknowledge that sometimes you would rather just stay in your pajamas than go and have a drink with some rando you've never met before. And I think they also were really smart in that they've decided to focus on a female audience. You know, obviously the app is really geared towards embracing the millennial woman and her dating experience. And they have no illusions about what it's like to date now. You know, they're not pretending that it's always easy or it's always fun. And I think that is what's so great about it, that's what makes it feel so relatable. There's no, like, pretty gloss over everything. It's just like, here's the real deal. The other thing that I love about Bumble is, for those of you who, like me, work for a brand that has a digital product, it's kind of hard sometimes to know what to post on Instagram. You don't have, like, a cute makeup package that you get to take a picture of every day. They have done a really good job of just embracing this, like, text-based idea. First of all, it's obviously very efficient to produce this content, but it also really stands out in the feed. I think when you're looking, scrolling through Instagram, something like this is really going to pop in a nice way, but it also feels very internet first. It's like a Bumble meme, and I think they've been really, really smart about how they've done this. The other thing I love about Bumble is that it would be super easy to be really negative about all of this, but the brand puts a really positive spin on all parts of dating through humor and empowerment. What you'll get as a follower is advice and encouragement and humor, but you won't see these kind of perfect dating stories of how people found the one, and I think that's what people enjoy so much about what they're doing. I also think, you know, so I don't know when it was, last year, the year before, they launched their kind of two side businesses, Bumble BFF and Bumble Biz. And it's just kind of a nod to the fact that not everyone is dating online to get married. And I think it's really smart how they've kind of segmented that out a little bit. And what's great is, again, what they're doing is working. So they have almost 500, when I looked last, 500,000 followers on Instagram. You know, it's not a 1.8 of Glossier, but this is substantially more than any of their competitors in the category. The closest one was Tinder with 223. So clearly something that they're doing is really resonating with people, and I think the approachable tone and the positivity is a huge part of that. Cool. So I am really tearing through this. So those are the main case studies that I wanted to share with you. There are three brands who are leaning into authenticity on the platform. I just threw a lot of information out. So recap, make it really simple. What are some easy ways that your brand can lean into being authentic on Instagram? At the end of the day, this doesn't have to be super complicated. These are the things that I would think about. One is just be genuine. You know, what is really true to your brand? If you don't know, I think that's an important thing to define. At the end of the day, it should really relate to your brand strategy. But I think it's important to not be different just for the sake of being different. I think it's really about, at your core, like, who are you as a brand and what are you doing for consumers? I think positivity is really important. Again, there's kind of this difference between being honest and being negative, and Bumble, again, does a really nice job of that, where they're not glossing over the downsides of things, but they're trying to highlight the upsides. Same thing where, again, we're not showing empty parking lots, but we're not showing that every neighborhood in America has beautiful mansions that you can live in for $10,000. And then I think the last thing is really providing value. What are your consumers asking for? What do they need that only you can provide? The reality is, the way that social works now, you can pay to get your way into someone's feed. You can get eyeballs on your content. But that doesn't always mean that they're going to pay attention or that they're going to like it. It takes work to be engaging and to drive high-quality engagements. I've definitely worked some places where the focus has been so much on impressions. And what you kind of realize is, when you're so focused on that and you're not really thinking about what people are doing with your content, you miss the boat. And so what I've tried to think about lately and what we're doing at Trulia right now is, when we treat and respect our customers as individuals, when we listen to what they're asking for, and when we create content that actually adds value to their lives, you'll start to see ROI from that, because they'll start to engage with your content in a really positive way. And for me, like, that's really what it's all about, is helping people through the service that you offer. Okay, that's it. Went really fast. Cool. Any questions? Yeah, I mean, for me, at least, and for Trulia anyway, we're thinking it kind of comes to audience first. And so, like, for example, I always have my team look at platforms and trends, just have a sense of what's going on. And they do a lot of, like, analyzing on Snapchat. But Snapchat isn't really right for us right now as far as audience. The consumers there are a little bit too young. No one on there is going to buy a house anytime soon, especially in this market. So we keep an eye on that stuff. But when we're leaning into certain platforms, we look at audience first. And then the content that we're creating is usually based on insights. So whether that's kind of like an overall brand marketing insight or like a specific product insight, we kind of tend to go from there, if that makes sense. Yeah, totally. I mean, I hear you. When I worked at Lyft, it was like, how many photos can we post of cars? None. Like, no one cares. So we had to work our way around that. I guess in general, I don't feel like there's a hard and fast rule, which I know is kind of an annoying thing to say, but I don't think that there is. And what we generally do, just from what I've read and what I've experienced, is, like, you kind of have to work your way up. I read these studies, I don't know if anyone else has read these, it's super fascinating, that basically, like, consumers can kind of get to any amount that you're posting as long as they get used to it. They're just expecting something from you. So I was reading this case study from some crazy fashion brand, I can't remember what it was, but they post something like 25 photos a day. It's bananas. But their consumers are used to it, so they like it. So it's not a big deal for them. They've kind of, like, hit this point where they just accept seeing this all the time. Whereas we post three times a week. If consumers saw 25 photos from Trulia, I mean, we would just lose so many followers. It would be weird. So we kind of, like, worked our way up there. When I joined, they actually didn't, last year, they didn't really have a social media person at Trulia, so they weren't posting at all. And I kind of, like, worked my way up to what felt like three times a week. And part of what dictated that, too, was the amount of content that we had and what was manageable. You know, we don't have enough photos to post 20 photos a day. That would be insane. But where you're a fashion brand and you have, like, a lot of product photos, it's much easier. So I would say, like, you know, bandwidth and content is a huge part of that. And then you could start somewhere easy like that, you know, two or three times a week and just kind of get a sense of the engagement. And then we play a lot with days of the week, too, and just see, like, is it Saturday morning? Is it Sunday? It seems to change all the time, but we're kind of getting a little bit more of a sense of what days of the week do better for us. But every brand's going to be a little different. Yeah, yeah, of course. Oh, good question. Always fun. So, yeah, I always try to avoid talking about revenue with my VP of marketing, but she is not cool with that. So I, at the end of the day, I have just been able to let organic be, I've just kind of said, let organic be our playground. Like, let organic be a testing ground for us. We're really about nurturing this existing customer, because it's very rare that we're going to acquire new people through our organic content. And so we use this as kind of a testing ground for content, ways to engage our existing audience. It's kind of like the low impact content that goes there. Paid is where we are focusing on what the ROI is as far as revenue. So that's where we have tracking set up, and we're looking at how many people are going to visit properties based on certain content. But the kind of flow that I've structured is, say we get a bunch of new content in from San Diego, and so we'll test some photos on organic, and if one really pops and does really well in terms of engagement, we'll test that in paid and then see if that correlates to positive ROI. It doesn't always work that way, but so far we've seen a lot of success that way, where it seems like what's doing well in organic also will do well in paid. But I've been able to kind of make organic this space that we can play around in, which is good. So I'm trying to hold on to that as long as I can. Yeah, it's always hard. It's so funny. So my design team gets so mad at me because I don't really care about what the feed looks like. It's hard because, you know, I think as marketers, we go and look at people's Instagram profiles a lot, right? But I don't know how often consumers are really doing that. Like, our profile visits, when we look in our metrics, are not super high. So I think it's something that I consider, but I'm not, like, super attached to. I don't want it to look like crap, obviously, but I'm also not going to stress out about it. So at the end of the day, I just try to provide a mix. Mainly what I'm focused on is engagement. So every now and then we'll throw something in there to mix up the feed and have it be a nice break. But I definitely, the reason that we lean so much into UGC is because it's been so engaging. We had these really cute, like, little designed quotes that we were throwing out there. People didn't like them. So we don't really use them as often. Every now and then I'll throw one in to just kind of, like, break up the color in the feed a little bit. But it's kind of like a lost, I know it's not going to do well. It's just for the sake of, like, okay, well, we'll just do this so that it looks good. And I think everyone kind of knows that on my team and is okay with that. So that's my approach anyways. I focus a little bit more on engagement than I would on the overall look and feel. But again, every brand is different. I think if you're, like, Trulia is not a very design-focused brand. If you are a very design-focused brand, you probably want to think about that a little bit more. So, yeah, so we do three times a week organically on Instagram, and then we do Facebook, we do a ton on Pinterest, and then we do a lot of paid on Facebook and Instagram too. So a lot of the stuff that my team is working on is not the stuff that's actually live in our feed. And like Facebook right now, we don't do anything that's organic, it's all paid right now. And it's mostly video content for the most part, but we do some articles on there as well. But Pinterest has been the latest time suck. So it's nice. It's been really great for us, but it's just a lot of work on the back end. So, a good question. Oh, yeah, good question. So stories, we are still, I mean, if you guys have found out the secret formula to stories, I would love to know. We are still finding our way a little bit. And I think it kind of took us, so I started about a year ago, and then started posting a lot of stories over the summer, and it was kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall, like, let's just see what people like. So then we kind of got a sense of, like, okay, this kind of content seems to be doing well, but it's so funny, of course you get a sense of it, and then, oh, boom, something changes, and now people don't like that anymore. So we again, make our organic Insta stories really about testing. And so I've kind of structured or told my team the way that you're briefing these in, it should be about testing something. So do we want to see how people engage with XYZ kind of photos or this feature or this or that, or will they swipe up or will they not? So that's kind of what we're doing. It ends up being about 2 a week. So we're not doing a ton, but I do think just to kind of keep ourselves visible, it's important to do at least a couple a week. But again, it's really done with testing in mind. I know. I know. I kind of feel the same way about Facebook Watch. I mean, do any of you guys watch IGTV? Does anybody? I don't. Yeah. I mean, I really don't. But it's funny. Some of the influencers we've been talking to, even the smaller guys, are really leaning into it. My theory is that Instagram is really pushing these guys to get into IGTV. They're trying to make it more of a thing than it currently is. We have not done anything on there. Our sister brand, Street Easy, they're based in New York. They do some stuff on IGTV, but it's mostly reusing existing content. So they haven't really been creating anything new for it. Live content, I have not done at Trulia. We did a few at Lyft. It was really stressful. So, and we just didn't really see like a big, any ROI from it. So it's not something that I've really played around with. I think if like maybe I was working in a little bit more of like an experimental environment, I would go for it. But it's, I'm kind of just curious at this point to see what happens. It doesn't have a big enough like audience growth to where I feel like it's worth investing in. And we continue to see such positivity from Instagram feed and stories and our other channels. So it's just kind of, we can only do so much. but yeah, I think it's worth keeping our eye on, and we continue to look at it and just see what's going on there. But yeah, good question. It's really interesting. I have no idea what's going to happen with that. It'll be interesting. I mean, I guess they did the same thing with stories, where they put stories in the feed and then all of a sudden stories took off. So who knows? And I think, you know, if we did lean into it, I'd probably want to do the same thing as just reuse existing content and get it up there and see what happens. But I mean, God, some of those videos are 20 minutes. I just think, are people watching these for 20 minutes on Instagram? That's crazy. Maybe. All right. Hi. I know. You know, we don't really use hashtags as much as we used to. And honestly, part of it is because I think like we'll use a few at like the bottom of the post. Like at the end of the day, it's good, but I think you use them strategically. It's annoying if you see like 50 in a post, but I think if you can be really thoughtful about it, then it's okay. And you're trying to reach people who actually might be interested in your content and not just hashtagging blue or whatever. But I think, you know, I think it still makes sense. It's a tool like anything else on there, and so I think it's meant to be used. For commenting the algorithm, I mean, this algorithm is so annoying, and it changes all the time, as you guys know. I think at the end of the day, so we don't measure success necessarily by impressions, but what we're looking at is, did the algorithm favor this content? And so that's, you know, when we're looking at organic posts, that'll help us understand, did Instagram like this content? So we do consider that, but it's not our primary metric of success. So I think it's good to look at and say, because you do want Instagram to favor your content, but sometimes it's on the opposite end of the spectrum. When we look at like our organic Instagram content, what got the most impressions and what got the most engagement, it's going to be totally opposite. So we tend to lean more on the engagement side.